This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Film Show on URN. This week we are doing the second half of the Best Picture nominees. In the studio with me I have Joseph.
Hello.
And last year's host Francis.
Hello, good evening.
Welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
Haven't been on since Christmas.
I know, it's nice to keep coming back and having these times where we can relive last year's.
Now, just to check first, which films have we seen? I've seen all four. Francis, what have you seen?
So, out of the ones we're doing this week?
That's right.
I've seen Green Book and I've seen Roma.
Actually, just out of curiosity, which of the other four films have you seen?
Out of Bohemian Rhapsody, Star is Born, Black Klansman and Black Panther.
So, yeah.
I've seen all four
seen
of them.
Seen all four. So you have a pretty good idea of the landscape. What about you?
Come on.
Yeah, it was the
one. Yeah.
Which four have you seen?
I have seen The Favourite, Green Book and Roma.
So I'm the only one that's seen Vice.
Yeah.
This is going to be awkward, isn't it?
I feel partly responsible for that. You were going to go and see it.
Yeah.
It fell through.
I managed to find a way to see it, so it worked out in the end.
Film of the year?
Not quite film of the year. Not too bad, though. Have you seen The Big Short?
I have seen The Big Short.
Adam McKay, it's the same director.
Tell you what, I was actually a big fan of The Big Short. I had no idea what was going on the first time I watched
it. Yeah, that's fair.
Still really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That's surely the sign of a good film, right?
Yeah. We're going to have to pause the discussion for Vice there, cliffhanger it a bit, because our first film is Green Book.
Okay.
Directed by Peter Farrelly and starring Viggo Mortensen. I didn't recognise him first, and also Mahershala Ali.
Yep,
that was also close. A good pronunciation.
And Linda Cardellini is also in this as Viggo Mortensen's wife.
That's right.
And she should be more stuff. She's great. Isn't
she was Velma in Scooby Doo, which going back a few years, she's also come on quite a long way.
I can't wait to see what Freddie Prinze Jr. Is in next. Is gonna fill out that repertoire of the Scooby Doo cast.
Oh no.
All right.
He was nominated for it was the only one nominated for a Razzie from the first Scooby Doo film.
Really?
Yeah.
Which character did he play? Was that
Fred? Fred.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we'll see him in something big soon.
So we have all seen this, right?
Yep. Saw it on Monday.
What were your first impressions of this? Because I went into this knowing nothing. Is it the same for you guys?
I knew the backlash behind it, that a lot of people don't like this film for various reasons. It's not great. Let's just put it there. It's not great. It's not terrible, but it's not great. It is far too long. It's about 20, 30 minutes too long. Could have easily cut it down. It just feels very studio, very basic. I think that's to do with Peter Farrelly's direction, which you can tell that this is the guy that directed films like Dumb and Dumber, and There's Something About Mary. You know, he doesn't have the...
I think it's still a big leap up from then.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I feel like this could have been handled a lot better. We could have seen a lot better film if it was made differently. If we focused more on Mahershala Ali's character rather than Viggo Mortensen's. Because it just felt a bit stereotypical, especially the portrayal of Italian-Americans just felt a bit, you know, a bit Mamma Mia sort of thing. Not like the film, but as in the saying. But yeah, it's not bad. I think the actors do what they can with what they have in front of them. I think Mahershala Ali is fantastic, as he normally is. I think he's shown a lot of range in his last two performances that he's notable for, being in this and Moonlight. And but yeah, it's patchy.
Well, one of the controversies was his character Don Shirley.
Yep.
There was criticism from his surviving family that he didn't really accurately represent either him or what happened, and he actually reached out to them, apologized, and said he did the best with what he had to work with. But the funny thing is, the film was mainly written by the son of Viggo Mortensen's character.
Yeah.
So there's two conflicting tales going on here.
That might also mean why they focused on Viggo Mortensen's character as well. I mean, I think Viggo Mortensen played the protagonist of the film quite well, because he's the one that goes on the journey.
Yeah.
Though they both sort of change throughout the film and learn different things, especially about each other as well as themselves. He feels like the right person to lead the film, because we're seeing the world through his eyes and he is a bit ignorant.
Yeah.
And then we see him come on maybe more of a journey, or at least a different journey. And I think it's a shame there has to be this backlash for it, because I think what it is at the end of the day, like, the facts might have been changed, but really it is just a road movie. And if you think about most road movies, whether it's the that comedy road trip or
like
a film,
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber,
it's a film where people go on a journey and change. So they're going on a physical journey. So in this case, they're going to the Deep South on a load of Don Shirley's performances.
Yeah.
They're also going on a journey to sort of overcome prejudice, overcome stereotypes.
Like a metaphorical
It just
journey.
Becomes exactly. a bit problematic there, though, because it's all a bit obvious. Like where they break down and he just sees all the all the black people in the area in the field sort of thing farming. And
yeah,
like
you're right.
It's a bit too on the nose. Mm. And I feel like if it had been directed with a bit more care and a bit more... it's just not the right film to be talking about these kind of issues.
I don't think Viggo Mortensen has much of a chance against Definitely people not. Like Bale and Rami Malek.
Malek and Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm pleased to see Viggo Mortensen nominated for Best Actor. And I think he keeps appearing in these amazing roles like Captain Fantastic.
Yeah.
And he does kind of keep getting overlooked. And hopefully, I think his time will come eventually, but I don't think his time is right with Green Book. In terms of Mahershala Ali, I mean, that man can't really do any wrong in my eyes. I love
100%,
him in Moonlight,
and
I think he was only in a third of the film.
Yeah.
And he stole it. And again, in this, he's playing a man very different to himself.
Yep.
And that shows, and I think it just shows that he has got a range. I don't think he's ever typecast. So I think he's, like you said, Joseph, he's probably the only winner of the night. If it wins Best Picture, something has gone wrong.
That would be a bit 100%,
yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Film Show on URN. We've just been talking about Green Book, and now we're switching to another Best Picture nominee, Roma by Alfonso Cuarón. So one thing I just want to get out of the way first is this is nominated for Best Picture and Best Foreign Film.
Yeah.
So my theory is it's going to win Best Foreign Language Film, and then the people who voted for it aren't going to be motivated to vote for it for Best Picture. So I think that does lessen its chances.
Although, can I just quickly say, right off the bat here, in terms of all the other Best Picture nominations that are going up this year, Roma is the best film by a mile, an absolute mile. I was so blown away by this film, and I can't even really put my finger on it.
Technical aspect, I completely agree.
Exactly. It's a film where you can't watch it on your phone, and I don't know why.
Did you watch it on your phone?
I mean, watch it while on your phone.
Generally. Oh, I know.
I'm watching multitasking, basically. You can't watch it while you're doing your ironing or you're cooking. You just need to sit and watch it. And I think
Netflix like when you're taking
so
notes.
Platform.
Like I am.
Like if you want to take notes during it, you can. But there's not many notes to take. But it there's just something about it I really like.
It's a very simple plot. Would you like to briefly go over the basic plot of it and who it follows?
I'll try. So which decade is it? Is it
1970s?
So 1970s Mexico. It focuses on a more sort of, in terms of the class system, a more sort of privileged family background, where there's a wife and a husband who we see quite early on there's sort of a rift in the family, and it's quite telling that the dad is barely in it. And the film chooses to focus on the family at the start, but then begins to sort of pull away and focus on one of the maids in particular, and sort of her life and what she's going through at the time. And it takes place over quite a long
period. I think it's a year, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, a year in the life. And the changes along the way, very interesting. In typical Alfonso Cuarón style. Did he have Manuel Abetzi as a cinematographer?
No, he didn't. He did it himself.
Okay.
And he is nominated for Best Cinematography.
He said in his acceptance speech for Best Cinematography at the BAFTAs, he said, throughout the whole of this, I was just thinking, what would Chivo do, who is Emmanuel Lubezki?
That's his nickname.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is with Manuel Lubezki, this man won, was it
three
Oscars
row,
3 years in a row for Best Cinematography.
Gravity,
Revenant.
Birdman and The Revenant.
And Birdman.
Three incredible shot films, very differently shot.
No
as
one
well.
Knows his name.
Yeah.
No one will even recognise him, and he is a phenomenal cinematographer. But if there's one thing they'd like to do in their pairing, it's long, consistent shots.
Yeah,
I was going to talk about that. So the way this film is shot is like long shots with wide lenses in
wide
one
lenses.
Long takes.
Yeah.
And
was it 70mm film?
Very impressive.
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Shoot on digital.
I think it'd be digital because it's straight to Netflix. So.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. Maybe. I'm not sure. Mm. I haven't looked into
and
it.
I think it's done that to give you a sort of unbiased view of the character, so you can just see the conflict between them play out and the dialogue between them play out. But I don't know if... first off, I don't think the film should have been in black and white. That's my first hot take about this film. They could have done so much with the colour and the scenery of this film.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was thinking about that. It's just like there's not many shots that you think, oh yeah, this is a really beautiful shot. Yeah. I think it's a well
and it's in digital.
Yeah. I actually like the aesthetic. I really loved it.
Martin, like, I'm with you, mate.
Like the black and white. I feel like every shot was sort of like a picture.
Yeah, and it pauses on that shot for you to just admire what's going on, like the rooftops.
But that's sort of the point, because there's so much going on in each frame. You sort of concentrate on other things rather than just being taken aback by the beauty of it, which it could have easily done, which is a hallmark of European cinema. Mm.
It just, to me, felt
unique. Yeah. Like, I don't think you see that very often, that type of cinematography.
And it takes a step back.
I don't know, because my problem is it was like digitally... made into black and white. It wasn't like shot on film or anything like that. You know what I mean? So there's some parts of it, it's like too bright. The lighter colours are too bright. And it could have been shot slightly better. But at the same time, I completely understand why he got Best Cinematography Nod. I certainly don't want to call it bad. Like, that would be a massive stretch. But I do have like some mixed feelings about it.
You've got to give me the shot at the end on the beach.
It's one of the most unreal scenes in the whole film, yeah. For me, that whole scene wound
you up, or it was unreal.
No, it's unreal. The best thing I've seen on film this year.
Oh, that's good, because I thought you were about to say so unreal.
With non-professional actors to do that kind of emotional scene is ridiculous.
It had a very limited release, and I remember Isaac talking about that.
Yeah.
Is it an indie film or
not quite? It's Alfonso Cuarón's definitely
just went and sold it.
Who's behind it?
He did. Children of Men and Prisoner of Azkaban.
Gravity.
Birdman.
He didn't do Birdman.
He didn't do Birdman.
Thinking of Gravity. He didn't do The Revenant either.
No, that was Inarritu as well.
Inarritu, yeah.
But he did Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
His best film.
Yeah.
Definitely the best of that series, to be fair.
To be fair, I like Gravity again for just what it's able to do.
Not a fan of Gravity.
So it could have been. I wouldn't say it's indie. He has so much clout in Hollywood that
now he can do whatever he wants. Exactly. He can make this passion project. He bounces
between genres anyway. So,
but yeah, what I found really profound about this film is it's its imagery. It's this subtle sort of style which drives home the point.
So are you going to watch the rest of it?
I am 100% going to watch the rest, because I would like to see how it ends.
Do you recommend it, Joseph?
Yes, 100%. If you've got Netflix, just stick it on. But you need to be in the right frame of mind to watch it, and in the right setting.
Is it the same for you, Francis?
No.
Of course it is.
It's fantastic.
I'd say give it a try. And it's definitely one of those films you got to decide for yourself.
Bear in mind, it is quite a tough watch.
Now we're going to be talking about The Favourite, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. I was really worried about trying to pronounce that.
No, you're doing well this week.
Who also did The Killing of a Sacred Deer in 2017 and The Lobster in 2015, which is a film which I only actually saw like last year at some point, and it completely took me by surprise how much I liked that. So have we all seen The Favourite?
I have.
Yes, I have indeed.
And I have not seen this one.
So is it just me and Martin that's seen it?
No, I've seen it.
You've seen it? I thought you said you didn't see it then. So it's just you that haven't seen it, Francis.
Yeah, that's right. But I'm very excited to hear what you have to say, because I actually know very little about this.
See, I went into this knowing very little. In fact, all of these, you could say, aside from Vice, I went into knowing very little about. So first off, I just want to get this out of the way. Nicholas Hoult needs to be in more movies.
100%.
He was in this. He's very good.
I didn't realise he was in it, but he plays actually a big supporting role in it as the leader of the opposition.
He needs to star in something.
Like, I know, he's great.
Yeah, he's going to be in the Tolkien biopic that's coming out in May.
Good choice.
He was very unfortunate, I think.
That's a big opportunity.
Year before last, because he was in a film with Kevin Spacey, and then a film produced by Harvey Weinstein. Then neither got released, so he's just really unfortunate with that. Mm. But it's good to see him back in major films.
Of course, this film stars our three main characters, Olivia Colman as Queen Anne, Emma Stone as a former lady who is demoted to being a servant at the palace, and Rachel Weisz as the Queen's main confidant, Sarah Churchill. So, Martin, would you like to quickly take us through the plot of the film?
So, basically, it's in the 16th century and...
yeah, well, it should be, I think so. Yeah. Around 1700.
1700.
I think so, yeah, that's it.
So, Queen Anne is the queen at the time, and she's not a very competent queen.
No.
And she relies on a lot of advice, which, is it Lady... Who's a wisest character?
Sir? Sarah Churchill.
Sarah Churchill.
That's her actual name, yeah.
So, yeah, she's the one who's sort of pulling
Lady
the strings.
Lady of Marlborough?
Lady Marlborough, yeah, that's the one. She's pulling the strings and she's sort of running the country for the queen.
Whispering her in her ear, almost.
Yes, the queen likes to eat cake. She likes to enjoy herself whilst other people run the country. And all this sort of gets ruined when Lady Marlborough's niece...
Cousin
comes
Emma
in.
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone's character. And she's quite manipulative and she sort of disrupts the peace. And it's basically the two women fighting for the queen's sort of affection.
Yep. At first, she's like, you think she's more of an innocent character.
To Rachel White. The character arc is crazy,
it's very
man.
Satisfying.
Yeah, it's very troublesome, though, as well. Because sort of when you have this kind of dynamic, you've got to sort of have a rooting factor and it sort of shifts. As the film goes on, the sort of
I think it goes back and forth all the time. Yeah. Like, who
but
you
I think
support?
That's really troublesome because all of these characters are pretty terrible things.
Yeah, they are bad people. Like the main three. Yeah.
Well, we're dealing with politics here, so it's a dirty game.
Yeah. Well said.
But what I'm thinking is, the film is so innovative because you're dealing with three strong, powerful women in a lesbian relationship. Doing what
minor
they want
spoiler,
to do.
Minor spoiler, sort of. Is that
sorry? Apologies for that.
But that's revealed early, to be fair.
Yeah, but I was kind of thinking. Hang on, are you hinting that they could be?
The way they do it is both of the characters are sort of using it to manipulate the queen. Mm. Yeah, because they play with her emotions as well, and we explore this dynamic in the film of they're playing both a social game and a political game, and Emma Stone's getting a bit in over her head, and you kind of feel sorry for her. But as she starts to take control a bit, then...
The more power she gets, the crazier she gets.
Yeah, and that's supposed to, like, mimic the queen, who is of course, the highest power and is out of her mind, to put it delicately.
Yeah.
What do we think of the performances in this film?
I think very strong.
Oh my God. Insane. Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, her accent is... You genuinely forget that that's Emma Stone, and you think that she's a British lady, like, doing... her thing, you know what I mean? So it's the acting performances from all three of them.
It's very well cast.
It's brilliant.
I'd love it if Olivia Colman won Best Actress.
She's got
but
to.
I feel like they're going to give it to Lady Gaga.
This is Olivia Colman's first nomination.
Oh, okay. Oh,
okay.
This is Emma Stone's second, right? The other one was Birdman?
She won for La La Land.
She won for La La Land. Was she Best Actress or Best...
Actress.
She was Best Actor.
No, I mean, would it count as Best Supporting? No, she was like the lead of that one.
But she's the lead of this one as well. And she's
technically,
doing
it's her story. I'd say
funny
it's her
how
story.
That works out. I mean,
all three are leads.
Anthony Hopkins, he was in Silence of the Lambs for 20 minutes and he won Best Actor.
Exactly. And I think Emma Stone is pretty much in every frame of this film. But it's
a bit like, have you seen Great Gatsby?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a bit like Nick Carraway is to Gatsby. Like, Nick Carraway is the protagonist, but the film's about Great Gatsby. Yeah. And you can say the same about this with Queen Anne. So, yeah, all in all, I'd really recommend this film. Out of the four we're doing this week, it's definitely the one which I think is most accessible. It's probably the director's most accessible film, probably because he didn't write it. So it's got enough of his weirder taste without it going into the lobster territory.
That's good, because I think the lobster does, for some people, they will find it's going a bit too far, a bit too much.
There is some off-putting elements to it. I did really like that film as well, though. Would we all recommend this?
Yes.
100%.
And I want to see it.
Yeah, so that's a good sign then. To wrap up the all 8 Oscar films being reviewed, we're now going to talk a bit about Vice. The only I have seen.
It's going to be a short conversation.
So it's going to be pretty good. I liked it. Thanks for listening. So one of the complaints I have about this is the screenplay is just by Adam McKay, who also directed it. And you can sort of see how there's a lack of restraint. Very quickly, the story is about Dick Cheney, the vice president to George Bush. And it covers most of his career, and the problem with that is it loses a lot of focus about, you can tell the thing the film really wants to talk about is the fallout of 9/11, and stuff like the Patriot Act and the torture memo. Do we know a little bit about all that and how it mainly affected them? It's more of an American thing, but the Patriot Act allowed them to do surveillance on anyone's communication devices at any time. It was something like that. And the torture thing reopened Guantanamo Bay. You get the idea. It's that sort of like the more negative criticized aspects of the fought to 9/11, especially the Iraq War. There's a big thing about that. Now, my problem is it should have just been about that. Instead of showing us about half an hour to an hour of his rise to the position of being vice president.
Is he still alive, Dick Cheney?
Yeah.
That might have had something to do with it, to be honest.
Well, it's not very kind to him. It's not. It's very critical of him. It's very much blame. It's, weirdly, it blames him for what even I'd say was out of his control. You can see how he manipulated things like the Iraq War to happen. But he does tie together some things that I sort of disagree with without spoiling it. But I get a lot of it's very interesting, the thing it tries to criticise. But at the same time, it could have been a bit more balanced and a bit more informative about the fallout after 9/11. Which is weird. And he does this thing that I really want to talk about, that Adam McKay does. And it was a bit charming in The Big Short, but in this film it's just sort of annoying, where he talks down to the audience and he over-explains things. He does these fun little vignettes or creative bits of dialogue to explain more complicated ideas. But he kept repeating the same concepts that we really didn't need to hear about again and again, when he could have been telling us more about the Patriot Act or the reopening of Guantanamo Bay, or just any of the stuff like that which people might want to know more about instead of going over the same things. One of them was the executive order, the unitary executive theory, which is the idea that the president, if the president does it, it can't be illegal. That sort of thing. It gives the president executive orders. To be able to do basically whatever he wanted without having to explain himself. And I get how he's tying that into the present day. You can see everything. You can completely understand how everything needs to tie back into present day. But he needed to expand a little bit more on Cheney's motivations for why Iraq specifically. And the how the war came about in general, instead of just hammering the same ideas over and over in a really patronising way. Is there anything you want to know about the film?
So what would you say about Dick Cheney's characterisation by Christian Bale?
Well, I think Christian Bale did a great job, and I wouldn't be disappointed if he won Best Actor. There isn't, unlike, say, Rami Malek, there isn't a lot for him to do in terms of expressive-wise. There isn't really that of the top element, and there's a lot of subtleties to his performance, which was very entertaining to watch. But like I say, it wasn't a parody, if that's what you mean. I think he did a good job at making him seem human, even though at the same time the film was being very critical of him.
Apparently, people I've spoken to about his performance, apparently you forget that it's Christian Bale who's made this transformation
in the late years. I get that.
He's put on a lot of weight. He's got this American accent, and after a while you start to actually believe that this is Dick Cheney.
That's always a good sign. A sign of a good performance.
I had
that with Rami Malek as well, to be honest, as well.
I want Rami Malek to win Best Actor. To wrap up, we're going to say what film, we've talked about All Eight now across two shows, what film do we want to win Best Picture, starting with Martin?
The Favourite. I just like how unique it is in terms of who the protagonists are, what they're trying to say, what they do with genre. It's a period drama, but then it's mixed with comedy. I've never seen something like it. And I think it does actually, it's quite innovative and it is quite progressive in what it's trying to say.
Joseph?
None of these films I'm particularly passionate about. I think if we'd have had some of the films from last year, they would have easily swept up in this category. But I would go for Roma, because I just feel like it'd be a big important step the Academy needs to make in terms of awarding a foreign language film, and I think it'd just be a very important cultural kind of thing.
Fair enough. Francis?
Roma. It just spoke to me on a very different level to the rest of them. It's in its own league. I just really hope Black Panther doesn't win.
Well, I'm going to go with The Favourite. I've already said that, so not much of a build-up to that. But yeah, like you were saying, it's a very unique take on a very relevant topic to today. And I was saying at the start for Green Book, how I like how a film can balance all these different emotions and humorous parts while still being about a serious topic or a genuine story. And I like how it's a historical that's sort of reinventing how that genre is like displayed to a mainstream audience. I think it touches on everything it needs to.
It's not preachy as well. It's about LGBT, it's about women. And at no moment do you ever get preached at or told that this happened or that happened. It just presents it, and that's it. There you go.